You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's Friday, March 31st. I'm Rachel Lederman. Coming up on today's show, we hear about record-high complaints against airlines. After that, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy, and then .org, our weekly look at local nonprofits. At 8:30, it's a BBC update followed by Connections. This week, Leilani Rashida Henry will talk with an author about how a community's history shapes its future. And then at 9:30, Dave McIntyre will host the Morning Sound Alternative and bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. And that's still ahead, but first, these headlines from Stacey Johnson.
Colorado lawmakers are reacting along party lines to the historic indictment of former President Donald Trump. The Manhattan DA announced the indictment yesterday, although the exact charges against Trump won't be known until his arraignment. That could come as soon as next week. U.S. Representative Jason Crow called it a somber day for the United States, adding that Americans should have faith in the judicial system. The Centennial Democrat was one of the House managers in Trump's first impeachment in 2020. Colorado Democratic Party Chair Morgan Carroll welcomed the indictment and said the same charges anyone but Trump would have already have landed that person in jail. Trump has been under investigation in New York for alleged hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels during his 2016 presidential campaign. Dave Williams, the head of the Colorado Republican Party, called the indictment part of a political witch hunt. Representative Doug Lamborn, also a Republican, acknowledged the indictment is an unprecedented event, but questioned the motives of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Lamborn called the indictment politically motivated with the goal of derailing Trump's 2024 presidential campaign. Trump has denied any wrongdoing. Xcel Energy may spend another $25 million to clean up the Denver Elitch Gardens amusement area. KGNU's John Kellen has more.
According to court documents, Xcel's $25 million investment will be in addition to $6 million the company has already spent for environmental cleanup at the Denver Park. Developers want to turn the 60-acre site into a new neighborhood called River Mile. Xcel's predecessor, Public Service Company of Colorado, operated a manufactured gas plant there from 1889 to 1928, according to the Denver Post. By the early 1980s, long after the plant had been demolished, environmental testing showed contaminants in the soil and groundwater. The city of Denver said Xcel could be liable, and the company agreed to reimburse the costs of the testing. The current 60-acre amusement park site is owned by developer Revesco Properties and Krunky Sports and Entertainment, the owner of the Denver Nuggets and Colorado Avalanche, who are also targeting Xcel's former plant as the source of the site's contaminants. The companies plan on developing the area near the South Platte River and Spear Boulevard in the decades to come, along with development around Denver's Ball Arena. Also, according to the Denver Post, Xcel filed a lawsuit earlier in the week against its insurance carrier, Continental Casualty, saying Continental is refusing to cover the $6 million Xcel has already spent on environmental cleanup and the additional $25 million it could spend. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
CU Athletics and PointsBet, a Denver-based online sports betting company, announced Wednesday that the parties are ending their partnership early. CU and PointsBet had 3 years remaining on the lucrative sponsorship deal, which started in 2020 as CU became the first Power 5 conference school to engage with an online betting sponsor. CU's relationship with the sports betting sponsor has been controversial from the start, according to the Daily Camera. Over the course of the five-year deal, CU was to receive at least $1.6 million from the online gambling operator. According to reports by ESPN, Maryland, Michigan State, LSU, and the University of Denver also forged relationships with the gambling industry. The American Gaming Association announced new guidelines earlier in the week that prohibit partnerships between colleges and sports betting companies. A source from BuffZone told the Daily Camera the decision to end the agreement was not related to the announcement by the Gaming Association. The Bureau of Land Management is opening up a 75-day public comment period for public lands rule, which supporters say will shift the Bureau's focus to prioritizing recreation, conservation, and protection of public lands and cultural resources while combating climate change. Supporters also say the proposed rule will have area managers work more closely with tribal nations. Among several Colorado groups announcing their support for the new rule are the Wilderness Society, Next 100 Colorado, Colorado, Colorado Wildlands Project, the Mountain Pack, and Rocky Mountain Wild. The environmental advocates say several businesses, along with several local, state, and federal elected officials, are calling on BLM to enact greater protections and conservation of public lands. As weather officials issued a red flag warning for the Denver area Thursday and continue to issue one for today, crews battled wildfires at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge and in Elbert Park and Teller counties yesterday. The South Adams County Fire Department took out a 6-acre fire at the Arsenal Refuge, which is about 10 miles northeast of downtown Denver. Authorities issued a mandatory evacuation notice for Eastern Park County and Western Teller County as a wildfire burned over 1,000 acres south of Lake George yesterday. A growing grass fire forced residents in the Elbert County town of Simla to evacuate yesterday. The 1,000-acre blaze south of U.S. 24 burned one structure. Authorities later lifted the evacuation order after containing the wind-driven fire. As mentioned, a red flag warning remains in effect for today, along with high winds. Winds could gust as high as 60 miles per hour for Boulder and 48 miles per hour for Denver and Fort Collins. The National Weather Service says skies will be sunny with temperatures reaching the low to mid-50s. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy in Boulder and mostly clear for Denver and Fort Collins. Tonight's temperatures will reach a low of 30 degrees for Fort Collins and Denver and 31 degrees for Boulder. Winds will continue to gust during the evening hours. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Rachel Lederman. The Colorado Public Interest Research Group, or COPIRG, released a report this week finding that consumer complaints about air travel skyrocketed in 2022. Each year, the Department of Transportation compiles this data. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Danny Katz, the executive director of COPIRG, to tell us more.
So, Danny, to start, the US DOT released this data a little over a week ago and decided not to include December's data because during December there were so many consumer complaints that they just haven't gotten through all of them. And to contextualize this for listeners, many may recall December was the month when Southwest booking system crashed and they had to cancel close to 20,000 flights. It was also the month where at one point Denver had more delayed flights than any other airport in the entire world. What happened?
Yeah, I think this December was just one more bad month in a year of big problems. 2022 itself was bad even before we hit December. In 2022, even though there were fewer people flying than before the pandemic, we saw consumer complaints skyrocket. They quadrupled. And we also saw the highest number of cancellations we've seen since 2001. Putting aside 2020, which was really an anomaly given the start of the COVID pandemic. And so normally the U.S. Department of Transportation is able to get this data out sometime in February or March for the full year. But this year, the U.S. DOT literally was like, oh my gosh, we got to just go ahead and release this because it's kind of overdue to the public. And so that's when we got it. And it came out, I think, a week and a half ago, and we've evaluated it since.
And so for 2022 minus December, what are the big takeaways?
The majority of the complaints fell into two categories. The first, not being able to get a refund or having trouble getting a refund. And the number two complaint was around cancellations and delays. And those two complaints added together were a majority of the complaints that we saw for the airline industry. We also saw a big spike in complaints around third-party travel agencies. And again, also a big complaint there was around being able to get refunds or problems getting refunds.
Why all of a sudden is there so much dysfunction from airlines? You know, this is not a new industry. Where did all of this come from?
Yeah, it's easy to blame weather, but we have weather every year and weather doesn't treat consumers poorly. And so clearly if consumers are complaining in the huge numbers that we're seeing, then it means the airline industry is doing something wrong. And we know during the pandemic, a number of airlines reduce their staffing. So that certainly is playing a role in this. We also have seen computer systems not working as well. And so I think there's just clearly, you know, the airlines are not stepping up and we need to ensure that we're holding them accountable. And this is clearly not the case.
So who is supposed to be holding airlines accountable? And why is that apparently not happening?
Yeah, so a lot of the responsibility falls on the U.S. Department of Transportation. But I think here in Colorado, we have a consumer watchdog, and that's our attorney general. And we should allow our attorney general to stand up for consumers like he and his office does on a number of issues, whether it's, you know, price gouging or other sorts of ripoffs or scams. And so, unfortunately, there is this unique situation where when it comes to actual state and federal laws that deal with airlines, attorneys general are not allowed to enforce those laws. There's literally something on a federal level that doesn't allow attorneys general to get in there. And so we think Congress should act. And 38 attorneys general sent a letter to Congress calling for the ability to do this. And I think it can only help to provide more enforcement, more watchdogs to stand up with consumers and the traveling public to ensure that airlines are meeting the expectations and the basic consumer protections that are provided in the law already.
What advice do you have for, you know, someone whose flight got canceled and maybe is struggling on the phone or even in person to get a refund? What would you tell them?
Yeah, it can be hard, but I would always say don't lose your temper. You generally don't get very far if you are yelling at somebody, and oftentimes being able to have a nice conversation will get you farther. But one thing that is clear in the law is that if a flight is canceled for whatever reason, you're entitled to a refund. And if that's what you want and that's what's best for you, you should make sure you ask for that. And if you're not getting that, there are ways to submit a complaint through the U.S. Department of Transportation and make sure that you get that restitution. So I think, you know, always know that you have the ability to get a refund if a flight is canceled for any reason. If you think a flight's going to be canceled, don't cancel your ticket before it's canceled, because then you will lose the right to a refund. And if they offer you a voucher, if that's what you want, you can certainly take it. But ultimately, you are entitled to a refund. So that's one thing to remember in these cancellations.
How is it possible that if you're entitled to a refund by law and you're asking for a refund, that you wouldn't get a refund?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't dug into every single complaint. I mean, a lot of them, you know, a lot of the data we have are sheer numbers. And so that's one of the reasons why I feel like there's a lot of room for improvement here, because if the law says you should be able to get a refund, then it should be a simple and easy process for people to go through. So it's unclear to me why this is so problematic. And this is the exact kind of thing that an attorney general office could look into. As a watchdog, can only help, and also have a U.S. Department of Transportation know that there are problems by submitting those complaints. I mean, oftentimes, you know, submitting a complaint is a flag for a regulatory agency and accountability agency to understand there's something going on. And there's a long history in our country of complaints leading to agencies recognizing a problem they didn't see before and leading to some solution.
You know, in addition to record numbers of complaints against the airlines in 2022, there were also record numbers of complaints against passengers from airline staff and flight attendants reporting what they called egregious passenger behavior. I mean, do you think all of this dysfunction is just, you know, a product of an airline industry labor problem?
We've certainly seen reports that indicate the amount of staff they lost during the pandemic, much of which, you know, retirements or layoffs or whatever, that is a reason why we're seeing such problems here.
You know, from some of the reporting back in December, flight attendants were saying, you know, I don't know if I want to do this job anymore, and I'm not being paid enough to deal with these really aggressive passengers.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like every business, they have a responsibility to provide, you know, a service to the customers. And if that requires them having higher staffing levels or better systems in place or whatever it may be, I think there should be a wake-up call to those airlines that clearly consumers are unhappy and clearly the trends for on-time performance and cancellation went in the wrong direction. And so they should be coming up with aggressive plans to improve their services and their business model so that this is an outlying year rather than something that continues to get worse and worse.
Danny Katz is the executive director of Koperg, Colorado Public Interest Research Group. Danny, thanks so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's sports talk.
People are always saying, Jamie, are you worried about AI and what it can do? And I say, can I do a Friday morning sports show here on KGNU? No. Until it can do that, let me know. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, and welcome to the best sports show here on KGNU. No need to double check on all those other sports shows here on KGNU or lack thereof. But you know we always have the biggest sports news and stories from across the Front Range here on this show. Today, one of the biggest sports stories, not just here in Colorado, but nationwide, comes out of Boulder, right here in our hometown, from the University of Colorado. Now, I know the last few sports talks have been about the Colorado Buffaloes. The women's basketball team and everything they've been doing has gotten a lot of attention, and I hate to sound like a homer, because that is the school I go to. But we're going to do another one on the University of Colorado because the hype around the football team has reached the highest peak yet in this new Coach Prime era. It was just announced on Thursday that the spring game has been sold out. The spring game! Over 45,000 tickets have been sold, absolutely shattering their previous record of 17,800 that were sold in 2008. For those who don't know, the spring game is a scrimmage. They're calling it the black and gold game, but it's a scrimmage, and sometimes it's not even a scrimmage. Last year in 2022, it was mostly just drills for the offense and defense. And the only thing that looked like a game was the fact that Ralphie ran, and she was still kind of small. We're expecting a bigger Ralphie this time. One of the major things missing from last year's game, though, fans. Just over 1,900 people showed up for that last game. In fact, this year's count of 45,000 fans is more than the last 9 spring games combined. Demand for this game has been so high that the university is charging for attendance. Students get in free, but that's around 6,000 tickets, and that filled up very quick. Seats were still the cheaper side, just $10 for general admission, but the fact that they were even charging is very unusual. CU hasn't charged for a spring game since the 1980s. But those in attendance won't be the only ones who get to view this game. The spring game will also be nationally televised on ESPN for everyone to see. It is the only spring game ESPN will be showing leading up to the college football season. And just a casual reminder that this team went 1-11 last year. They won one game. This kind of attention for a team like Colorado is beyond unheard of. The hype is on another planet. Merchandise sales are up. Season ticket sales are up. And I promise you right now, there will be a very significant jump in admission because time and time again, whether you like it or not, a good football team leads to higher applications. New eyes are already coming to Boulder for the team. 22% of the spring game's tickets purchases are coming from new customers. Change is coming, people. And as Coach Prime said, he's coming. And that is just about all I got for you today here on this fine Friday morning. You have been listening to Sports Talk. I have been your host, Jimmy Searfoss, here on KGNU. Make sure you tune in next week at this same time for more.
Time now for .org, spotlighting the work of local nonprofits and co-ops.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz from KGNU.org, and I'm here with Pink Pitcher from Fancy Tiger Co-op. Pink, you want to tell us a little bit about what Fancy Tiger does and why you guys chose to be a co-op?
Absolutely. Fancy Tiger has been in business for 17 years. In that time, we've been really dedicated to bringing fresh and exciting craft things. We're always trying to stay on top of trends and also to really seek out interesting and unusual crafts and craft supplies so that we're very different kind of craft store than, you know, if you go into one of the big box guys.
You want to talk a little bit about the co-op and how members participate in the co-op?
A little over a year ago, we transitioned to a co-op. Jamie and Amber, the former owners, had already been thinking about the long term of the business, which was their baby, you know, that they'd built from the ground up. and they read about the co-op model. When the pandemic began, they actually kind of kickstarted that process because it coincided with us completely changing what our business was doing when we had to, you know, close our brick and mortar and go to strictly online for about a year. And the process of learning about what it is to be a co-op and all this educational stuff was something that both the owners and all of us employees had to undertake basically from nothing. Many of us had no idea what a co-op was, had never heard about it. I was pretty familiar with the model, but you know, some of the specifics of how things work are different in different types of co-ops. In the end, we've ended up with, right now we have 4 owners out of about 12 employees. And as owners, we are, you know, kind of taking the reins of deciding things like what inventory to stock, how to manage benefits and wages for all of the employees, and how to kind of steer the business and decide which direction it's going. But at the same time, we really try to have everyone involved, even those who are not owners, because in my mind, one of the benefits of being an employee-owned business is the kind of democracy of it. It's being able to get everybody's input, being able to get the feedback and information and thoughts and ideas from everybody who works there. And frankly, it actually takes a lot of weight off of your shoulders as an owner. It's not just you who has to make some big decision. You can, you know, ask other people what they think and, you know, people who are engaged and invested in it.
You'd mentioned that you guys are a little bit different than a big box store. You want to talk about how you're different?
So when we are bringing in supplies to sell, we often are looking at it from a kind of different angle. We really pride ourselves on having a lot of sustainable supplies. We're also looking for things that are unusual. We carry, for example, a Portuguese yarn, Retrosaria, that I believe we might be one of the very few shops in the US who carry it. And we also like to partner with other small businesses, and particularly with other women-owned and BIPOC-owned companies, like Farmer's Daughter, which is a yarn company out of Montana. You know, that means we really have a curated selection. We're carrying some of the higher quality products because everyone on the staff is a crafter. There is a lot of our personal choices going into the decision-making of what we carry. The other thing that kind of sets us apart is we have a big focus on teaching. We try to have as many classes as we can cram into our schedule and find teachers for, and trying to get into more advanced techniques, because oftentimes, you know, it's easy to find the beginner stuff, but you want to challenge yourself, you want to push yourself to be better. So we also bring in instructors from around the country or even around the world to do workshops.
Can you let folks know how to reach you and where you guys are located?
You can find us in person at 59 North Broadway in Denver and online at fancytigercrafts.com.
You've been listening to kgnnews.org. For more information on this organization or to listen to other episodes, please go to news.kgnu.org.
Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Jimmy Searfoss, John Kellen, and Chris Schultz for the help for today's program. Stay tuned for Connections with Leilani Rashida Henry. That's after these headlines from the BBC.